Luna had decorated her bedroom ceiling with 5 beautifully painted faces: Harry, Ron, Hermione, Ginny, and Neville. They were not moving as the portraits at Hogwarts moved, but there was a certain magic about them all the same. Harry thought they breathed. What appeared to be fine golden chains wove around the pictures, linking them together. But after examining them for a minute or so, Harry realized that the chains were actually one word, repeated 1,000 times in golden ink. Friends. Friends. Friends.
Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. I'm your host, Ziana.
And I'm your other host, Adelia. This season on the Basic Cinephile Podcast, we are reading all the Harry Potter books and watching all the Harry Potter movies. And this week we are discussing the last book in the series, The Deathly Hallows.
How are we already at the last book?
It's tragic.
All of the feels. This podcast contains spoilers. This book has been out for 15 years, so let that sink in and make you feel old. So we don't feel bad spoiling anything and everything about it, because you've had 15 years. But if at this exact moment you've decided, man, I really want to read Harry Potter, then you should stop this podcast and go read Harry Potter and watch all the movies, because we're probably going to end up spoiling everything in this last episode.
We're definitely going to end up spoiling everything in this last episode. And also, if you're joining on the very last episode, like, that's a bold choice, so...
It sure is. You have been warned, and here we go. This is the synopsis of the last book, aka spoilers galore.
So, in the wake of Dumbledore's death and the fall of the Ministry of Magic, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are tasked with the impossible. They must find the remaining Horcruxes and destroy them. Armed with little to no knowledge, a children's book, a deluminator, and a golden stitch Harry caught in his first Quidditch match with the inscription, "I open at the close," the group sets out on their first mission.
They end up at the home of Harry's deceased godfather, Sirius Black, and while there, Harry discovers that the identity of the mysterious R.A.B. is Sirius's deceased brother, Regulus Black. With the help of the house elf creature, they find out the location of the real locket and devise a plan to retrieve it.
But things don't go according to plan, and although they get the Horcrux, they're forced to go on the run. While on the road, Ron becomes disenchanted by Harry's lack of plan and direction, and in the middle of a fight, he disapparates and leaves Harry and Hermione alone.
With no idea of where to go to find more Horcruxes or how to destroy the one that they have, Harry and Hermione return to Godric's Hollow, Harry's birthplace. They meet Batilda Bagshot and agree to go to her house, but quickly discover that they have been lured into a trap by Nagini, Lord Voldemort's sinister snake. But they're able to get away just in time.
Ron miraculously returns to the group with the help of the Deluminator, just in time to save Harry from drowning in a lake. When Harry comes to, he's startled to see that Ron is there, and with some encouragement from Harry, Ron destroys the locket Horcrux with the Sword of Gryffindor. With a renewed sense of purpose, the group sets out to find more about the book that Dumbledore bequeathed to Hermione in his will, leading them to the home of Xenophilius Lovegood.
They learn the tale of the Deathly Hallows from Xenophilius, and he tells them that it is more than just a fairy tale. Many wizards believe that if one person possesses all three Hallows, the Cloak of Invisibility, the Elder Wand, and the Resurrection Stone, then that person would be the Master of Death. Knowing that he has the Invisibility Cloak, and that the Horcrux Gaunt Ring is the Resurrection Stone, Harry realizes that the wand that Voldemort has been after is none other than the Elder Wand, or the Death Stick, as Voldemort knows it.
But there isn't a moment to tell the others as they learn that Luna has been kidnapped, and that Xenophilius has alerted the Death Eaters to their location in exchange for her freedom. The trio is able to get away, but shortly after, they're captured by a group of Snatchers, who take them to the Death Eaters' headquarters at the home of the Malfoys.
While there, Hermione is tortured by Bellatrix in an attempt to learn how they ended up with the Sword of Gryffindor, which was supposed to be in Bellatrix's vault at Gringotts. Meanwhile, in the dungeon, Harry and Ron discover that Luna and Ollivander have also been taken captive. Miraculously, Dobby the house elf appears to save the day, and they manage to rescue everyone and apparate to safety. But not before Bellatrix stabs Dobby, and yet again, Harry is forced to bury someone that he really cares about.
The hodgepodge group of fugitives are given refuge at Bill and Fleur's, and it is here that Harry, Ron, and Hermione develop a plan with Griphook the Goblin to break into Bellatrix's vault at Gringotts, convinced that the vault must contain another Horcrux.
Their painstakingly crafted plan begins to fall apart almost instantly when the group arrives in Diagon Alley. With the help of some Imperius curses and some Gryffindor bravery, they are able to escape on the back of a malnourished dragon with another Horcrux.
Harry gets a vision from Voldemort and sees that he has discovered that his Horcruxes may not be as safe as he thought they were. Knowing that their time is limited and that the last Horcrux is at Hogwarts, the trio travels to Hogsmeade and with the help of Aberforth Dumbledore and Neville Longbottom, yay, they sneak into the castle.
Voldemort and his Death Eaters are on their way, but so are the Order of the Phoenix and Dumbledore's army. An epic battle ensues, and in the midst of the chaos, the trio find and destroy the Horcrux that was hidden at Hogwarts. Now, there are only two Horcruxes left, Nagini the Snake and Harry Potter. Bravely facing his death, knowing that it is the only way to defeat Voldemort, Harry allows Voldemort to kill him.
But Voldemort's killing curse doesn't actually kill Harry. It kills the Horcrux that lived inside of Harry. With the help of Narcissa Malfoy, Harry plays dead and is carried up to Hogwarts with the Death Eaters. But yet again, Voldy's plan is thwarted when Neville kills Nagini, and Voldemort sends a killing curse at Harry that rebounds and kills himself. Yet again, Harry Potter was the boy who lived because of the sacrifice of love.
Bum, bum, bum!
So much happens.
And that's it, folks. That's the story of Harry Potter.
You heard it here, not first.
Definitely not first. Oh my gosh. Okay, so yeah, we have officially reread the entire series. How do you feel about the books being over?
It's super weird to have read it like consecutively and in a smaller time frame than I have
yeah.
in the past.
Yeah. I've definitely never read them this fast.
Yeah, it feels weird to have them over, and then I have a lot of thoughts about the series that I kind of had, like, dulled over the years that I might have had in the moment, but I just, like, haven't read this in so long that...
For real, I do need to address the elephant in the room, or rather the mandrake in the room. We have mentioned in previous episodes that our adorable little demon cat, Frankie... sounds like a crying mandrake. So she appears to not be calming down anytime soon. So we're just gonna use this as like a soundscape. So if you're listening, just imagine yourself, you're at Hogwarts, you're with Professor Sprout, and you have some partially noise canceling headphones, and you are trying to raise some mandrakes to save Hermione and the rest of the people in the hospital wing. Well, from the basilisk.
They actually use mandrakes in the final battle.
They do. They lob them over the wall.
It's really quite fitting that we have our own mandrake here. We're like, we are at the Battle of Hogwarts.
Obviously, we're doing this on purpose, and we want this to be, you know, a full sound experience.
Definitely not, because we have no other choice.
Definitely not that. Okay, so yeah, I'm feeling kind of the same way about the series being over. It feels a little surreal. So I have mentioned before that I have never really reread the books. I think I've reread a couple of the smaller, like earlier books, mm-hmm. but definitely not in order, definitely not with any type of a time frame, and probably not even all the way through. I probably just read parts of it. So the only time I've read through the whole series, like, again, I started in fourth grade, and by the time I got to the Goblet of Fire, I read that in fifth grade. So I was able to like power through the first four in like 2 years. And then after that, it was like, I had to wait for J.K. Rowling to write the books before I could read them. So I'm sure a lot of you listening, same way. But if you're a little younger and your knees click a little less than mine do, you may have had the blessing slash probably curse of just having the whole series available to you.
Yeah, you can just binge read all of it.
You could binge Harry Potter. That's not something I could ever do. And I mean, granted, what, we started reading in November and now it's March.
So we didn't exactly binge it, but we did
For someone who doesn't read a lot anymore, though, this was a binge.
Yeah. No, I haven't consecutively read anything, like, consistently, I guess. Yeah. Not consecutively.
Yeah.
Consistently read in a long time, more than, like, articles.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a lot of articles and blogs and stuff. But, yeah, so I'm with you. Like, I definitely... I was like, wow, I'm really, like, putting things together that I didn't necessarily notice the first time I read through the series. But I'm thinking about it, I was 10 when I started reading these books, so I would hope that at 32, my understanding has changed.
Well, you said it was 15 years since this book came out, so it's, I was 15 years old when this came out. And I think that I've changed a fair amount since being a junior in high school.
Yeah, definitely. And
sophomore, maybe? I don't know. In high school. Somewhere. It's been a minute.
Couldn't legally drive a car alone.
Yeah.
So that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so our changing, or our understanding has changed just with time and perspective. Mm-hmm. But then also we weren't able to just like go through them so quickly. And so it's like, yeah, you were able to make these connections between the books because you can go straight from one book to the next book instead of waiting a year and a half for the next one to be released.
Yeah. And I didn't reflect on it quite in the same way that we are throughout this podcast with each other. It was more so just like, oh my gosh, can you believe this happened? Can you believe this happened? You know, it was like, I just need you to finish so then we can talk about, like, the major plot points as opposed to, like, how it is now of, like, diving deeper in and be like, where are the social workers in, you know, the magical world?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, this was such a blessing for our English teachers, for the English teachers of the millennial generation, the fact that so many of us spent our summers, like, pounding these books out and just like reading them like crazy, and then the first thing we would do was like call our friends, or you know, old school, maybe we hopped on AIM, dialed up that old internet, and talked to our friends about it, and we wanted to know, you know, what are your theories about what happened, and we're looking for symbolism and we're inferring meaning, and like we did so much school just on our own just because these books were so good.
Well, it's pure entertainment. And speaking of theories, I remember my biggest theory, and I'm, like, still proud of it to this day, was reading the sixth book and having R.A.B. show up, and everybody was like, who is it? Who is it? And I was like, oh my gosh, it's gotta be Regulus Black. I was, like, dead convinced as soon as I finished reading it, and I told everyone about it, and people were like, it could be, maybe.
Oh, I believed you.
You believed me, but, like...
But I would have never gotten there on my own. I wouldn't have picked that out. But when you said it, I was like, yeah, definitely. And it didn't ruin anything. The whole time I was like, is it? Is she right? Is she right? And then you were. I was like, yes. Score one for Adelia.
Cool.
I mean, yeah, that was a big guess. But yeah, so do you remember like the anticipation and the excitement when this book came out? Because we were saying, you know, we had to wait for the books to come out, and they would do those like midnight launch parties. I never went to one, but I wish I would have. But this last one was like next level excitement. The end of the series.
Yeah, we were doing like a church group thing that whole week.
Yeah, we were.
It was coming out, and so we were like driving past Barnes and Noble and being like, can we go? Can we please go? Like, I just want to pick up the book real quick. And like,
I was so mad. Our youth pastor kept being like, no, you just want to read a book the whole time. And I was like, no, you don't understand. This book has been my life for 7 years, and now I have to wait an extra week. Luckily, since we were like on a little church trip, we weren't allowed to have our phones. We couldn't go on TV, we couldn't go on the internet.
There were no spoilers.
So we literally lived under a rock with all our little church friends, and nothing was spoiled for me. But it was, as soon as we got back, I'm pretty sure Mom had already bought the book for us, mm-hmm. and we just locked ourselves in a room, didn't talk to anyone, and we were like, don't talk to me.
Actually, I don't know if Mom had bought it. I think we went to Fred Meyer at the grocery store.
Shout out to Fred Meyer for all our Northwest listeners.
The goat of all grocery stores. Slash,
if you're not from the Northwest, when you go, Fred Meyer's is worth a trip.
Yeah.
It's Freddy's. It's like a classier Walmart. Yeah. Less overwhelming Walmart.
Yeah, do you need to pick up, like, some pre-made, like, already hot soup, and then also get camping gear, and then, like, maybe grab some clothes or something?
Like, and then you some, can, like, some, like, furniture. Seeds in a garden hoe to, like, go plant a garden, and then a couch.
Yeah, so, jack of all trades.
We are way off topic. Fred Meyer. But... Yeah, but so the excitement of this book when it came out was just like, ah, monumental, so much fun, and now here we are, so much longer away from that time. Reading it was still pretty exciting.
Very exciting, just like our partners that we're gonna hear from right now.
At The Basic Cinephile, we are all about accessibility, so we're super excited to introduce you to a new audio app called Newsly for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment, and it reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web has become listenable. So stop scrolling and start listening. You can follow any topic as specific as you like. They've got sports, science, finance, even the Kardashians. And you can find the latest articles and they'll read them to you. They have podcasts as well, including the Basic Cinephile podcast, Season 1 Harry Potter. So download and use Newsly for free now at www.newsly.me or from the link in our episode description. And use promo code BASICCINEPHILE, but replace all of the I's with 1s. So it's BASICCINEPHILE, and I'll put that in the description. And if you use our code, you can receive 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly.
Welcome back to Rapid Fire Questions.
Rapid Fire.
Okay, I'm going to do the longest intro ever to then ask quick questions. So, in this book and in the series overall, we have had some issues with some of these characters. Like, Dumbledore is so withholding, Snape is a bully. There's just a lot of people who I'm like, what the
actual heck? That are incredibly problematic.
Yeah, Draco Malfoy, have you actually done anything nice yet? I don't think so. So, rapid fire. Do you think the following characters redeemed themselves?
And am I just saying a yes, no, and then later I can explain? Because I kind of feel like let's just...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and then we'll go through once, you say yes or no, and then we'll go back through again, and you can clarify with like two sentences.
Okay.
Okay, so do you think the following characters redeemed themselves? Creature, the house elf.
Yes.
Snape.
No.
Dumbledore.
No.
Vernon Dursley.
No.
Petunia Dursley.
No.
Dudley Dursley.
Kinda.
Lucius Malfoy.
No.
Narcissa Malfoy.
No.
Draco Malfoy.
No.
No redemption here in Edie's Harry
no,
Potter.
No, absolutely not. Okay. Okay,
so Creature, the house elf, he originally kind of screwed Harry and the whole order over because he went to the Malfoys.
Yeah, and I think that that's deeply rooted in that allegiance to his master. And his master, through and through, is Regulus. And nobody was showing him any respect mm-hmm. at all. And then they finally do, and he is, like, absolutely incredible, so helpful, makes food, mm-hmm. helps them get Mundungus. Like, it's just, they finally respect him, mm-hmm. and he comes through.
He ends up being a sweetheart. He also never... disobeyed the rules of the house elves. He followed them.
Yeah.
But he became an ally. So I agree. Creature, you redeemed yourself. Severus Snape.
I think that he amongst others are only redeemable in the movies because of who plays them.
Okay.
I think that Snape could have done everything he needed to do, still be kind of a jerk, and not leave Harry completely tormented. I don't think his obsession with Harry's mom is creepy.
It is creepy.
And unnecessary. And he does not actually do a good job of protecting Harry.
Not at all. Yeah, it's, I was obsessed with your mom. Your mom married someone else. And so I was just a massive jerk to your kid forever afterwards, but also like working to help keep him alive. So, I mean, I agree. I don't think Snape redeemed himself.
I think he is better than...
He switched sides, which is good. But in my eyes, I guess I'm going from like redemption from Harry's standpoint. So did he right his wrongs with Harry? I don't think so.
And also, real quickly, Snape is dying, and he says basically to Harry, like, look at me. Because Harry has his mom's eyes, and the last thing he wanted to see was, like, Lily Potter's eyes.
It's really actually creepy when you think about it. It's because
not
it,
okay.
Hi, this is someone that you grew up with, that you were friends with. You drifted apart during school, and they went this dark route. You went this completely other route. They're still obsessed with you. You try and be friends with them, but you can't because he can't get over himself. And
he's hanging around with a really bad crowd.
So you don't want to be around them.
Literal Lord Voldemort.
Yeah. Yeah. Hanging around with the worst people ever.
Lily was completely justified in cutting off that friendship, even though they still kind of were friends because she sent him that letter.
And then Snape straight up sells Harry to Lord Voldemort, and he just is like, but don't kill his mom. Are you kidding me? You're never going to redeem yourself to a woman that you quote unquote love by murdering her child.
Mm-hmm.
Like being an accomplice to this.
And he never learns his lesson because 17 years later, when he knows, you know, that Dumbledore is dead and he has to really play the long game of like going back to the Death Eaters, he goes back to Grimmauld Place. He finds that letter and there's a picture of Harry, James, and Lily. Harry has like barely any pictures of him and his dead parents. And what does Snape do? Snape rips Lily out of the picture, takes it because he's still obsessed with her, and then leaves Harry and James. That is a weird thing to do.
And then also takes the last part of the letter that says, love, Lily.
It from Harry because he knows that that house now legally belongs to Harry, and Harry would have found it and that would have been his.
Yeah, it's no really, redemption for really Snape. Messed up. Also, why didn't Sirius show him that? There's no reason why Sirius shouldn't have showed him that.
No, okay. So many things wrong with that. Okay, so Snape, no, you did not redeem yourself. Mm-hmm. Albus Dumbledore.
I think Dumbledore becomes worse throughout the books, actually. Okay. I can see as he's, like, loving Harry and not wanting to, like, I don't know, make his school years suck. But, yeah. And that's a tough conversation. I'll give you that. But there is no reason why this old as heck man cannot figure out how to leave clear instructions to literal children.
Yeah.
Hi, I would like to task you with finding these Horcruxes. I can't find them. I don't know where they are. I am the literal smartest wizard in the world, according to the whole community. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea where these are, but you're 17. You should be able to get it.
Yeah.
What?
It's weird. I actually do think that Dumbledore redeemed himself, but it's not by a lot. So I think he redeems himself because, yeah, he didn't want to tell Harry that Harry was a Horcrux because he knew, like, for it to work, Harry would have to magically, you know, sacrifice himself for this bit of magic to hopefully work and have it kill the Horcrux and not Harry. And he didn't want this kid to know, like, hey, you're born to die. And he also, I think his real motivation was, didn't want Voldemort to know any of that in case Voldemort ever got inside of Harry's mind to where he could read it. So I feel like that's okay. I don't know.
That is one part of the information, though.
Yeah.
That is, like, such a minimal part. Because, yeah, if Harry dies and, you know, he can be brought back to life, that's great. But, like, Harry could also just, like, die at some point. I mean, he's very accident prone.
Yeah.
And then that Horcrux would be gone and he wouldn't have known about it. Like, it really didn't matter either way. Harry was ready to die.
Yeah.
With a Horcrux inside him or without. Like, he was ready to sacrifice himself for his friends. So that doesn't... I don't know. I just don't feel like he doesn't leave them with anything. And he's so secretive about so much of his life. And it just makes him, like, less credible throughout it. It's not this all-knowing, wise man. I think he, in a lot of ways, is incredibly foolish. And I mean, he would say that too, but...
Definitely.
I see
that. I think, though, I really do think that Dumbledore did his absolute best. I think this is someone who's highly intellectual, incredibly intelligent, but emotionally not so great. So I feel like he doesn't necessarily know how to establish like really strong friendships. I think he's great at being likable and getting along with people, but I mean, who's really close to him? You think about the people in his life and you're like, well, he's, you know, he works in the Order of the Phoenix with people, but he doesn't really get all that close to most people. I mean, I would honestly argue that his best friend at the end is probably Snape.
Yeah.
I think they definitely know the most about each other. And I think it's kind of this like trauma bond of like, holy crap, Harry's going to die and we don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. I don't think that Dumbledore is like the worst. I think he's still a good guy. I think he still did his best. Mm-hmm. But do I think he's necessarily redeemed? Do I think he like gets better? I don't think he gets better throughout this book. I think he becomes more infuriating and then he stays kind of the same as when he tells Harry, quote unquote, all of the secrets that,
yeah.
You know, like that's another thing. Like he says that he's going to tell you the truth and then he doesn't. And there are some things that he can't tell the mm-hmm. truth about, and I get that. But there is so much knowledge that would not be detrimental for either Harry or Voldemort to, like, fully know.
Yeah.
And he straight up says, Lord Voldemort will not try and inhabit Harry's mind again because he knows how painful it is to
yeah.
be inside someone so pure. So technically, Harry's mind is, like, safe again.
Yeah.
Harry can go to Voldemort's mind, but Voldy's not going that way.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I guess I just, in my mind, he's redeemed because the good that he did does outweigh the bad, and he did lay the plan for the destruction of Voldemort. Do I think it was an ironclad plan? No. Do I think it could have been executed way better? Absolutely. But I think he did his best. And I think he did it with the intention of, you know, even though he wasn't necessarily super loving or affectionate towards Harry, and he should have absolutely taken him to Godric's Hollow, where they're both from, and, like, shown him his parents' grave and the house he lived in, like, so much of that important sentimental stuff that was just completely overlooked should have been done, and it should have been done by Dumbledore. But I think he did have Harry's best interest at heart, and I do think he brought him under his wing and got as close to him as he was capable of doing.
I think it's kind of ironic that Dumbledore talks all about, like, Harry's strength is in his friendships, and it's in this community, and it's in love, and all these things, and Dumbledore is one of the most isolated people out there, which is a lot more on the Voldemort spectrum.
I think it's like, why he kind of understands Voldemort.
Which is why Dumbledore didn't want to be prime minister? Minister of Magic. Minister there of we Magic. Go. I was like, that's not it. And he didn't want to seek that power. But I have some issues. I think that overall he's a good person. But I think that that's kind of like how most people are in death, is mm-hmm. there are a lot of really great things about them. And then there's also the not so great things, because you can't get it all right.
Okay. Well, okay, so agree to disagree, split vote on Albus Dumbledore. Vernon Dursley.
No, the guy sucks. He's always sucked. He's never been good.
Sucks till the end. Doesn't even, like, hug him or say goodbye. Thinks that Harry's trying to steal his house, but Harry already has a house.
Wants to not go. Like,
he's an idiot, he's a jerk, and he's definitely not redeemed. Petunia Dursley.
Gosh, I have big issues with her. She doesn't say anything. She looks like she wants to say something, and that is the most emotion we get
mm-hmm.
from Petunia this whole time towards Harry.
Yeah, and then we get some of her backstory when Snape dies and Harry gets to see his memories, and we get to see, like, young Petunia, who was clearly jealous of her sister that she got to go to Hogwarts and whatever. But you think about it, and you're like, okay, so you're saying goodbye to your 17-year-old nephew who you've raised and should view as a son. So someone that you've raised. You can't even say, like, I love you, goodbye. You can't even say something nice, let alone I love you. All because you're jealous of something that happened to your sister when she was 11 years old.
What I'm realizing going through this is that J.K. Rowling wrote a lot of very emotionally stunted characters.
Yes.
That are very complex, but these are people who did not heal their inner child and have done literally no work on themselves. They're like, this is traumatic. I'm going to lock that inside of me and let it hurt me my entire life. I'm talking you creature and Snape and Dumbledore and Petunia, mm-hmm. like all of you.
Yeah, I totally agree. All of them. Okay, Dudley Dursley.
Dudley was raised by Petunia and Vernon, which means that he had no chance in H-E double hockey sticks of being able to grow up emotionally adjusted. I think he redeems himself in the best way that he can, mm-hmm. which, I mean, he's part troll, basically. So he tries to be nice, and what he does is, like, leaving the tea outside Harry's door. Mm-hmm. Harry thinks it's a booby trap. Dudley's being nice the way he doesn't know words.
Yeah, and then when they leave Privet Drive and they're going without Harry, Dudley's like, wait a minute, like, why isn't Harry coming with? And he's, like, sad, wants to, like, hug Harry goodbye. And he's the only one. And so, yeah, I agree. I think Dudley has redeemed himself. I think there's definitely a possibility for him to, like, still suck in the future, but I think he showed that there's hope. And I think he's also 17. He hasn't had a chance to heal his inner child because he still is a child.
Yeah, he has the possibility.
So the threshold for redeeming yourself as a child, much lower. So I think, Dudley, you are redeemed.
Yeah.
Lucius Malfoy.
No.
No, he never does anything nice or friendly or positive. And honestly, he's not even a good follower of Voldemort, which, like, obviously I don't support, like, being a strong Voldemort follower, but, like, pick a lane. If you're going to be loyal to someone. This guy is loyal to no one but himself.
Yeah, he becomes disenfranchised by it.
His long flowing locks.
Yeah. Oh, that is.
The man's got a great head of hair.
We need to know that hair care routine. It's
but a
so good.
Trash personality.
Oh, total trash. Yeah. I don't think that, I'm just going to lump this all in. I don't think that any of the Malfoys redeem themselves.
Okay.
I think that Lucius, he flip-flops hard and he realizes that he's not going anywhere in Voldemort's army. So what's the point in trying?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be brave and die, but he will just, like, cower away.
Yeah.
Narcissa, completely self-serving. Yeah, she quote unquote helps Harry, but really she just, like, says that Harry is dead when he's not, only because Harry has given the information that Draco is still alive.
Oh, she does it because she cares about Draco, but if she hadn't have done it, then Harry probably wouldn't have lived and that whole plan wouldn't have worked.
No.
So for me, Narcissa does redeem herself, but the bar was low for her.
The intentions weren't pure for me, so
okay. Were not, but the actions were invaluable.
Yeah, it was absolutely necessary, yes, for her to do this.
So I guess I don't care as much about intentions. She did it.
You're talking end game, and I'm talking, like, healing relationships. So you're like, the outcome was right. You know,
one of us is more emotionally stunted than the other. And spoiler alert, it's me.
And I also don't think that Draco redeems himself. He doesn't help out at all.
Not at all.
He just manages to not kill Harry. You know, he lucks out in the sense that he never does a crime that's, like, so big that he can't come back from. I think that the only reason I felt that Draco was redeemable is because of Tom Felton.
Tom Felton is lovable. There is not one single second where Draco Malfoy in these books is lovable.
No.
So I know there's a ton of Draco stans out there, or for our older listeners, that just means people that
stand by the actions of Draco. And
Draco,
they're like,
Malfoy. He's got a lot of fans. So if you're a Draco stan, please hit us up on Instagram at The Basic Cinephile. I gotta know what's wrong with you, because this kid is awful.
Yeah, and are you, are you a Draco stan or are you a Tom Felton stan?
I'm a Tom Felton stan.
Oh, yeah. In the movies, I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, go Draco. You know, I feel some heartfelt emotion that you can't, you know, get this vanishing cabinet to work.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, I don't give two flying hoots about this. Like,
not one single hoot given.
Okay? No hoots were given during this reading.
Speaking of hoots, shout out to Hedwig. I forgot that she died in this book.
Oh my gosh.
She's the first casualty of the book, and then immediately after that is Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah.
It's a 1-2 punch. This starts off like, hey, we're at war and everyone's dying.
Yeah, you're
boom, baby.
Your only connection to the magical world when you were away from school has died. And then the strongest of all the ores.
And he just dead. Kind of felt like he was gonna live forever, even though he's a total basket case. You just always trust that Mad-Eye Moody is going to pull through. Like, who's going to mess with him? You know? Yeah. So, yeah, that was sad. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Hedwig. Okay. So, in this book, which storyline did you find more interesting? The Horcruxes or the Deathly Hallows?
Horcruxes. Hands down.
Agree.
Voldemort, Tom Riddle, such an interesting character.
Yes.
And I, like, honestly, I wanted more of the Horcruxes. The Hallows, I feel like, kind of wrapped itself up literally in the amount of time of the Beetle, or of Beetle the Bard. Like, that was enough of a storyline.
It was a cool,
for a book.
It was a cool twist, but yeah, I feel like it overall, what, like 1-2 chapters worth of information if you were to compile all of the Hallows information together.
Mm-hmm.
But the Horcruxes, we've been learning about these unknowingly since the beginning.
Yeah.
Knowingly for the past couple books.
Yeah.
So I agree, Horcrux storyline, more interesting. And speaking of storylines, you know that I love coming up with, like, what I think should be the next spinoff of the Harry Potter universe. We've talked about this a lot. We need a Gringotts. We need a Bill Weasley Gringotts in Egypt breaking curses storyline. Like, yeah.
I want Charlie to fly in on a dragon, you know.
Yes.
I want it all.
So that is our number one, like, we need that storyline. So from the Deathly Hallows, so obviously we're following the entire series from the viewpoint of the protagonist, Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously everything that happens in this book is all about Harry's individual journey towards finding the Horcruxes and defeating Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
But in this book, it's chaos because they're at war, right? So we bump into all these different groups of people who have, like, their own storylines going on. You know, Lupin and Tonks are going to have a baby, and he's thinking about running out on her because he doesn't know if he can be a dad because he is a werewolf. You know, we've got that story. We have got Potter Watch. So we've got, like, Lee Jordan and the twins, and they are sneaking onto the airwaves and broadcasting all this information that they can find and, like, keeping the hope of the rebellion alive.
And Kingsley joining in.
Yes, and they're getting all these, like, insider interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
But it really does. It keeps everyone connected. Like, Harry and Ron, Ron tells them about it, so they've been listening, and then they meet up with, like, Dean Thomas. That's another storyline. We've got Dean Thomas, Mr. Tonks, Griphook.
And another goblin
who have been, like, on the run from Snatchers because they're, like, Muggleborns, or they're goblins who are being chased. And, you know, and they've been listening to Potter Watch. But so, like, the people who've been on the run from the Snatchers, that's a whole different storyline. You've also got Luna and Ollivander, who are both kidnapped by Voldemort. And then they're kept in the dungeon at the Malfoys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, Voldemort's trying to get the information about the Elder Wand, and Luna's being held captive. So, like, that's a storyline. Another storyline is Xenophilius Lovegood, and he is publishing the truth in the Quibbler. You know, he's kind of like the Potter Watch, but the print version.
Yeah.
He's printing the truth. He's the only one who's printing, like, pro-Harry Potter. And because of that, Voldemort wants to silence him and kidnaps Luna. But you've got that whole, like, you know, the press, the story of the press and getting out the truth. And then you've got Dumbledore's army. You've got Neville and Ginny keeping the resistance alive at Hogwarts. So all these different storylines, and there are even more than that. So I want to know if you could make, like, your own spinoff series or movies based on one of those, like, subplots of this book, what would you want to see?
Okay, so if I were to do a spinoff, like a book and film situation.
Okay.
I would want Potter Watch. I want to know what the Weasley twins are up to. I want to know what Lee Jordan's up to. And you know that they're just, like, causing a ruckus, not only on the airwaves, but also just, like, in real life.
Yeah.
And so I'm just very curious to know what's going on at all times, how it came to be, how they even made this, how they're getting it out there to others.
Yeah.
When it seems as if the wizarding world is pretty disconnected from each other.
Yeah.
People aren't really, you know, doing communal activities anymore. So how would you know about these things? And your mail's being watched and you're, you know.
Yeah, they're ripping families apart at the ministry. They are having all Muggleborns have to, like, come in and have a trial hearing. And then they're basically being, like, stripped of their wands and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tearing apart families. Muggle-born students can't go to Hogwarts. They're, you know, like Dean Thomas, on the run for their lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very true. Everyone has never been more disconnected, but also this, like, longing for unity and, more than anything else, information. Well, want to know what's going on.
Well, I think that that might be one of the most central type storylines that you could get a lot of other aspects from it. But I have to say that in my heart of hearts, I'm the most interested in Dumbledore's army, because you have Luna for a lot of it. You're going to get the Karos and Neville just, like, coming into his own.
Yes.
You know, like, he doesn't have these other, you know, students that are a little bit more known for being outspoken. Like,
yeah,
he's it. It's his last year at Hogwarts. He is, you know, causing all this chaos and forcing students and teachers to kind of have to pick a side, you know, like, he's not allowing what Voldemort wants to be taught to be the narrative at the school. He's at least causing people to think about it.
Yeah.
And that's really important, because especially at that age, like, you're so impressionable. And if you're only getting one source of information, it's just bound to impact you a little bit more in the long term.
Yeah.
And Neville's just not allowing that.
I feel like he, that he steps up since Harry, Ron, Hermione, Dean is gone. Is Seamus still there? Seamus might still be there. I don't remember. But basically, like, a lot of his other Gryffindors from his grade aren't there. And Neville has always kind of been in everyone else's shadow. And when they all left, they found out, like, yeah, this guy was sorted into Gryffindor because he is brave. He's a natural leader. He's resourceful. He was smart. He found out how to use those coins that Hermione had made in the fifth book for them getting the order together, or the Dumbledore's army together, to, like, practice spells and stuff, which was cool. But Neville's out here using it to communicate with his Gran, who's on the run. He's using it to communicate with, like,
the Order of the Phoenix.
The Order of the Phoenix, Aberford, Dumbledore. Like, Neville's taken what he was given and then just taken it to the next level. And in this book, it's not with the help of anyone else. Like, this is all Neville.
I think that you see how intuitive Neville is.
Yeah.
And Harry, you know, gets to the Room of Requirement and it does exactly what he needs it to do, but nothing more, nothing less. It just, it's there, you know? And Neville, you know, Neville not only has it, you know, it's growing and bathrooms pop up and there's different sections and, you know, asking for all these, you know, special accommodations to be made. And he just gets it, that the room listens to him and straight up finds the way to get to the Hog's Head. Like, you know, he finds the Ariana Dumbledore portrait, you know? And that is not something that I think that anyone else would have found. I think that Hermione would be too intellectual. Harry is all action. And Ron is just, like, a ride or die. I mean, he does leave, but, like, he doesn't look before he leaps. I mean, he looks before he leaps, but he'll still leap.
I think the only other people who would have maybe discovered that were the people who are still there leading Dumbledore's army. I think it's Luna and I think it's Ginny.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so,
and I think we see with them kind of, you know, ruling the school or whatever, we get to really see them shine But also, we don't really get to see it because it's a story about Harry. So I agree, that would be an interesting series. Yeah,
and I would love to see Aberforth and Neville's meet cute. Like, yes. That's got to be such a weird interaction. And I want to be there. I want to be a fly on the wall.
For sure. But also, you can tell, like, Aberforth. Gosh, thank you. Aberforth. I keep wanting to call him Abernathy, and that's wrong.
That is wrong.
That's wrong. More wrong. Okay. But Aberforth is closed off, and he's bitter because of the trauma that he faced around Ariana and
Grindelwald.
Hating Grindelwald and really, you know, having it out with his brother, and, you know, it's a rough life. But he is a people person at his core. He's someone very sensitive. That's why he wanted to take care of his sister. He's never strived for this level of greatness. He just wants to have genuine connection with the people around him. And I can imagine that his meet cute with Neville was probably really awkward, but I think those two really connect because they see people for who they really are.
They're kindred spirits. Their hearts are both good, and they've always been underestimated and undervalued in their perspective groups.
For sure. It's not that Aberforth is stupid or, you know, couldn't do more than own the Hogshead, but it's like he wants to own the Hogshead and live a quiet life, and he has the exact life that he carved out for himself. If he wanted to be Minister of Magic, he probably would have found a way to do it. He just didn't want to.
Yeah. So that's the story that I would love to see the most.
I think the first one you mentioned would be what I would want to see the most. I want to see the Potter Watch. I want to see how they even come to find Kingsley to come be on the show. I think, like you said, it would have a lot of connecting storylines really naturally. My second choice is your first choice.
Okay.
The Dumbledore's Army. I would agree that those are the two most interesting sideline stories that we have.
I think that the beauty of Fred and George and Lee is that although they're like fighting for the good side, they're also going to know some like sketchy people that are like,
oh yeah,
you know, they'll feed them information that's, you know, if it's beneficial to me, then I'll give you a little something. And they're not going to like judge you for it. They're just going to be like, all right, you know, like, let's roll with this.
They're hustlers too. So I bet they're using this to still sell their joke shop stuff.
Oh, I mean, they straight up do. They're the ones that like create the Ministry of Magic's like approved like shield jackets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They get government contracts during this period of time.
They are wheeling and dealing, but they will also show up at Hogwarts ready to fight on the drop of a dime.
Yeah. And speaking of, I forgot just how many people died.
There's so many people that die. Tonks's dad dies, and then Tonks dies, and then Lupin dies. I just keep thinking about
Little Teddy
and his grandma. Like, she lost everyone. So sad. And then, okay, is it Fred or George? One of them loses an ear, and one of them dies.
I think Fred dies.
Okay.
I can't remember now. I read this book several weeks ago. And I've been waiting for this moment, and I forgot in this moment, they show up, they're going to show up for the fight. And they also, I believe, had their galleons as well. So like they're still, even though they're out of school.
Yeah. They're still checking it.
Yeah.
Okay. Fred died. Yep.
Oh, that would hurt so bad. And saying that like his last laugh etched in his face.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was still like having fun throughout, you know, not necessarily fun, but like
he died the way he lived.
Yeah.
Going Sirius all kind of did it. That too. He kind of like had a laugh smirk on his face when he died. Mrs. Weasley calling Bellatrix a biatch and killing her was epic. I absolutely love that she's the one who got to do it.
It's incredible. It's so perfect. Because, like, yeah, would you want Neville or Harry to have killed Bellatrix as well. Definitely. That, you know, they would have both been exacting revenge. But I think that it's important that the, like, one super notable Death Eater death comes from an adult. Yep. You know, these kids are still remaining, like, pure of heart because they're, like, out here just, like, disarming people or, like, let me throw mandrakes at you.
Oh, and that was Mama Bear. That was Mama Bear Weasley. You aimed a killing curse at my daughter. Absolutely not. I'm coming for you. And, yeah, I'll use an unforgivable curse and I will kill you.
Yeah.
Come at me, bro. Yeah. No, I loved that Mama Bear side of Mrs. Weasley. And also, like, she always plays such a strong caretaker. And I like that we got to see a stronger side of her. Like, she has been fighting for these kids since day one, and I think this was just a different way that we really got to see her, not as, like, the weak link or the one who just, like, cooks for the Order of the Phoenix, but she's in the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, and I like
she's that she's a witch, and she will cut you.
There, it's a pure blood standoff. Mm-hmm. You know, are we gonna go blood traitor, or are we gonna go with, you know, pure blood through and through?
Yeah.
And we're seeing yet again, like, it's not so much about, you know, that pure blood elitism. Mm-hmm. It's about so much more. And so I think it was important that you see that triumph mm-hmm. over good and evil. Okay, so one thing that I either forgot or just completely missed, even though there's, like, a straight up whole, like, section in the book, the last chapter, that, like, explains exactly what happens. I didn't realize that Harry's death was a Fidelis charm for everyone in Hogwarts, or, like, all of his people.
I had forgotten about that.
I had completely forgotten, because I remember he died, and then he, you know, goes and talks to Dumbledore, and that's another thing. I didn't realize that, like, the weird creature that's in there that's, like, you know, writhing in pain, that's, like, Voldemort's spirit.
Yeah,
you know, like, I past redemption, didn't realize that. Again, okay. Was 15 when I read this, so not grasping things, but I just didn't remember that Harry was essentially like his mother. I sacrificed myself mm-hmm. for you at the hands of this evil, and now you can't get hurt.
Yeah,
like, so beautiful, so powerful, and so important that Harry was just, like, willing to die.
Yeah. And that's a big decision to make, but he loves everybody so much. Yeah. I had forgotten about that Fidelis charm as well, coming in and playing into it. I love that Neville gets to kill.
Well,
He gets to kill a Horcrux. I absolutely love that. And then my favorite death is that Voldemort kills himself.
Yeah.
That is the most perfect ending. This, like, it's his pride. He mm-hmm. still never bothered to really learn about the Fidelis charm. He thought that he could, you know, bully his way into getting the Elder Wand, but really, because of some technicalities, like, the wand responds to Harry, and they cast charms at each other. Harry casts a charm to disarm, mm-hmm. and Voldemort goes for the kill. And the wand backfires on him and kills himself. So it's like, it's not even Harry doing it. I love that, because Harry never wanted to kill anyone. So I loved that he didn't have to. It's Voldemort's arrogance kills himself. That is a beautiful ending.
And that Harry had, like, explained it all to him. He's, like, laying it out that, like, that's not your wand, that's gonna be my wand. That's you know, I'm gonna give you this chance, like, you can choose something else. And even though you see in the, like, dream space that Voldemort's past redemption, Harry still comes at it from this place of, like, not necessarily forgiveness, but just of, like, you can do this, you can change your ways, I have faith that this could be an option for you.
That 1/7 of Voldemort's soul that is still human could still have a chance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other 6 Horcruxes, like, no, those are cursed little dead baby spirits.
Well, and they said the only way to, like, heal a Horcrux is to, like, feel true remorse.
Yeah.
And that it's like so painful that sometimes causes death. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so Voldemort, which way are you going to die? Are you going to die, you know, by redeeming yourself and being remorseful and realizing what you did wrong? Or are you going to die because you're prideful and you're just like, I'm the best wizard in the world and, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to go out that way. And also, I don't think that he is a good enough person to even, like, he wanted to die either way. He either needed to win or to die, because if he didn't die, then, like, he doesn't want to live in this, like, Azkaban situation.
No, and I don't think he was ever capable of remorse. I think even when he was a child, before he ever split his spirit, I don't think he had empathy. I don't think he had the ability to feel empathy.
Yeah.
So even if his head decided, like, okay, I do want to survive this, I do want, I'm going to choose the right path, I don't think he was physically capable of it.
No, he's a bad dude.
He's a bad guy. So we end it so beautifully with Voldemort blowing himself up. And then we get the epilogue.
Oh, God. Okay. That one hurt even at the time. I was like, oh, well, first of all, I was really under the impression that I thought that Harry was going to die and that Neville was going to be the one to actually take down Voldemort,
mm-hmm.
which I think still would have worked and, you know, would have been great.
I wanted Harry to die as well. I mean, I didn't want him to die because he is my favorite character and I love Harry, but I just thought that would have been a more powerful ending. So when he lived, I was like, okay, it seems like we've really, like, we have mm-hmm. saved this kid in some pretty special magical ways here. Okay.
Yeah.
But I still liked the ending. And then the epilogue, I just remember fuming at the end of the epilogue and being like, that was the dumbest epilogue. It's the worst chapter of the entire series, and it's the capstone of it. I hate it. I hate the names of the kids. I hate that she was just like, yeah, and everyone marries exactly who you think they'd marry. And then, you know, Malfoy and Harry are actually good now, and they can just kind of, like, smile and nod. And I'm like, you absolutely should not let your children anywhere near the Malfoys.
No, they're still coming out kind of on top. And
you've seen what kind of dark stuff they have in their house. Like, these are not good people.
Again, they didn't redeem themselves.
They did not redeem themselves.
They saved themselves and weren't the literal worst.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they're pretty far up there.
I still think Narcissa did redeem herself, but I don't trust her.
Mm-mm.
I do not trust her. So, yeah, the epilogue, it
trash.
Was awful
trash.
When I read it. I have been fuming about it for 15 years. I haven't read any of it, but that line, all was well, still burned in my heart because it pisses me off.
Cheeses you off.
Cheeses me off. Is that a bad word? I don't know what bad words are anymore. Sorry, guys. It makes me mad. And then in rereading it, I was like, maybe it won't be as bad as I remember it.
It's worse. And, like, they try and make it, like, history repeating itself. So we have Teddy Lupin,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, has been raised by the grandmother. And he's, or at least I'm assuming he was raised by his grandmother. Because
that's the way they make it sound. It doesn't sound like Harry actually raised him.
No.
Because when your godfather's only 17, that's a pretty bold
That's a big ask.
Yeah.
A traumatized 17-year-old. I mean, they do it all the time.
He has a house.
Yeah.
And a house elf and a lot of galleons. So he is better equipped than most 17-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, but they just, like, he comes around once a week and, you know, has dinner with them every Friday, and Harry's with Ginny, and that's what Sirius did with Harry's family. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just came to his house all the time. But you have this orphan child yet again, and at least he has a bit more of a support system. But then these three kids, I cannot stand the name Albus Severus. Like,
trash name.
Just the worst. They're just the worst. Harry has no reason for naming his kid Severus.
Mm-mm.
That is absolutely bonkers.
Well, first of all, it's not a good name. And second of all, cannot state this enough, Severus Snape did not redeem himself.
He traumatized Harry. He abused Harry for multiple years of his life.
And had a very unhealthy obsession with his mother. That's not love.
No, it is not. That's not
love. Well, that is the series, though. That is the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
We've still got two movies left and a couple really fun deep dives planned for you guys. But that's it for the books, folks.
Yeah. So many feelings. Good, bad, ugly. Pure frustration. And, I mean...
Yes.
All of the things.
We would love, absolutely love to hear your opinions on which characters you think redeemed themselves and which characters not so much. So you can find us on Instagram at The Basic Cinephile, and we'll have stories and posts about this. So find us and interact, please. We love to hear from you. You can find us at www.thebasiccinephile.com. We are on TikTok at The Basic Cinephile. We're on Twitter at The Basic.
The Basic Cinef 1. That's one. Cinephile without the I-L-E and the number 1.
Yes. We put out new episodes of The Basic Cinephile podcast every Thursday, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you could please leave us a kind review telling us how much you love us, or if you have suggestions for why you don't think we're great, maybe don't.
Maybe that's a personal DM situation.
Maybe DM me, yeah. And we would love to discuss how we can improve. But yes, we would love to hear from you. We would love to see your 5-star reviews. We love the feedback. And we will see you back here next Thursday with a new episode. Bye.